Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome along to the Keith Andrews Show. In the hot seat today is Mr. Owen Shane.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for coming, pal.
No,
been a few weeks since you were in.
Yeah, I know I've been outdone. I think I've been kind of pushed out of a job.
No, you haven't. I told you you're always welcome in here.
Oh, thank you very
always.
Much. It's great to be here.
Valued guest in here.
Well, thank you very much. It means a lot.
You've had a busy week.
Very busy week.
You were heart and soul of that little misdemeanor. Down in Kerry.
Yeah, a misdemeanor is exactly what it was. Handbags is all it was.
Handbags, yeah.
Something that wasn't worth putting
imagine
my phone
being on commentary for that.
Yeah.
So go on, paint the picture for us, please, for anyone that hasn't seen it or heard of it, if they've been under a rock.
Yeah, so I'm sitting there in a stand at a county semi-final replay, and there's a little bit
in Dingle and...
And East Kerry. And there's a little bit of after David Clifford gets dispossessed. A Dingle player comes over to him, shouts in his face, and he kind of pushes him back, and another player pushes him, and then there's retribution after retribution after retribution, which kind of spills over to the sideline. A full brawl ensues involving all the players and a lot of the mentors from both sides, from both East Kerry and Dingle, which resulted in one Dingle selector getting caught on camera punching an East Kerry player, and he's got an 8-week ban. That's a video clip that's gone mental on social media.
Yeah, we've got the clip now. Here, haven't we? Like, we're messing about a little bit saying handbags. There's the dig we've just seen. He flew in, blindsided him. As soon as I heard that, I seen that dig, and you read the bits and bobs, and obviously you would have been covering a lot more closely. 8 weeks for me seems fairly lenient in the grand scheme of things.
Extremely
that's
lenient.
It's
the standard, exactly. It's if you look at it in a black and white term, there was an altercation between a selector and a player. That's an 8-week ban. David Fitzgerald got it, Stephen Wallace got it. But ultimately, it's the discourse around this sort of thing. What will actually change in the GAA's handbook, and how is it viewed? Like, I'm not sure what you think of this, but certainly if you think of the slew of incidents we've had in Gaelic games over the last couple of weeks, the fact that there has still been not much said of anything at all. I haven't seen anything really coming from Croke Park. I haven't seen any condemnation of these acts.
It has to be condemned. Because obviously my sport, if that happened in football, there would be uproar. We've only got to look back to Saturday at Stamford Bridge and Sarri's assistant analyst, I'm not entirely sure of his job title, the way he gouted Jose Mourinho twice. Donny Mourinho caught the first one particularly. He was looking in a different direction, but certainly on the way back, and the way that reacted. And there was calls for him to be sacked after that, which I thought would have been ridiculous. He overreacted. It got dealt with. But in football, if that had happened, one of the management team actually going onto the pitch and decking someone.
Mm-hmm. How do you think the reaction would have been?
I think it would be there would be uproar. We'd be talking about this for weeks, and the game's out of control. It's double standards.
Yeah.
We hear so much and preaching from the GAA and rugby to a degree in terms of what they do, how they do it. And a lot of what they do is really, really good. And I admire both of the associations for what they do, grassroots as well, all the way up, and the traditions that they hold. But in instances like this, that needs to be sorted out, because that is not acceptable. I'm sure you were at the game. Loads of kids at the games, I would imagine.
Totally, yeah. I completely agree. The thing is, you talk about all the great work that they do in the community and at grassroots. And in my opinion, the fact that a lot of club games are fantastic spectacles involving fantastic players, and it's all being destroyed with these acts of thuggery and violence. And that's what they are. And it's happened week after week after week. Like, plenty of people...
Is it happening a lot? Yeah.
It is happening a lot. And, like, there's been a lot of kind of sarky commentary around this, you know, like ban, at Joe Brawley, ban GAA now after he called for mixed martial arts to be banned. People saying, like, oh, what part of Ulster is Kerry in? Because people felt that they were victimising Ulster quite a bit. And, you know, it's like, removing that for a second, I think there is kind of a moment of self-reflection here that needs to be had by everybody in the GAA, that this is a serious issue. And part of the issue is what you say. Like, when this happens previously, I don't really remember us talking about this as a full-blown crisis. I believe that it is a crisis, and it is close to destroying the game. Parents looking at that with kids are like, I don't want my son or daughter to be involved in that sport. Like, if this happened once in an underage soccer match, or even a senior league soccer match anywhere in Ireland, do you think that the reaction would be bigger than...
No, without a shadow of a doubt, more would be made of it. And I think the fact that Gaelic football is more of a physical sport, I think there's an acceptance to a degree of what you can and can't do. But that clearly
Is the tribalism, I wonder, a thing there? Because obviously it's less about your parish, less about where you're from when it comes to soccer, particularly when you get older, you know, you move to better schoolboy clubs and stuff like that as well.
I know where you're coming from, but I don't agree with that. I know you feel more of an affinity. The closest I could bring it to would be playing for Ireland. As club levels, you have certain affinity, but it's never quite the same. And I suppose in rugby with the provinces, you have that, you know, hometown feel about it. Everybody's in it together. And I think someone was on with Joe during the week. His name evades me. He was on talking rugby tonight. He just brought a book out, played for Leinster.
Mike Ross.
Was it Mike Ross, yeah. And talk about when he went to Wasps. And it was a real different feel around it from when he moved from, obviously, his province. I know where you're coming from. Still not good enough.
Yeah, one last thing. I wonder, is the GAA getting an easy ride, or would it be soccer getting too hard a ride in that case? Like, do you think that the GAA gets an easy ride than rugby as well, I wonder?
Don't know enough about the incidents that have happened, and this one has obviously been on the fore. I've only been back in the country 18 months, where you're living it every day, and you see these clips, see these highlights. I'm obviously watching you guys reporting on it. But I think in terms of the GAA, they've been lenient on them, and it's probably both, really, in terms of if it happened in football, if it happened Premier League, Championship, whatever, League of Ireland, then I think it would probably be too harsh on those, and the uproar and the moral stance that everybody would have around it might be a slightly too harsh.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to see what the discourse would be if something like this happened in the League of Ireland. I think the public would be very quick to tar the League of Ireland with one quick brush.
I agree.
And people are doing that to the GAA now, but I think it's fair game to do to the GAA right now because of how many we've had. But they're still not doing it to the extent. They're still saying, well, this is isolated incidents, particularly when it came to some of the Ulster examples in the last 2 months. Whereas if it happened just once in the League of Ireland, you know, I think straight away you'd have plenty of people saying, well, this is just showing us that the league is broken and that it's poison left, right and centre. So, of course, I'm not suggesting that it would ever happen. But you wonder why. Why is it so unique to the other games? What's the difference?
I don't know.
It's a culture thing.
Yeah.
It's a different mindset.
I have to bow to your superior knowledge of it because I obviously have an understanding and I'm a fan of Dublin team and I'll go and watch it, but I don't know all the ins and outs, especially at club level and how frequently this type of thing happens. So I'll have to obviously go with what you all trust you on this one, but that's not acceptable, especially in this day and age. It was probably going on time and time again 15, 20 years ago when there was no camera phones and it didn't really get out. There was a little snippet the next morning in the paper where, yeah, there was a little bit of handbags.
After this.
But it wasn't just handbags. That behaviour is totally, totally not acceptable.
That's the thing. Mentions got a lot of people saying, well, this is just handbags. Why did you put up this video? Put your phone away, that sort of thing, that kind of culture.
That's a very old school mentality.
It is. And I think that's doing more harm than good.
Yeah. Before we move on to footballing matters, we should be bringing up, there's a lot of people dressed up today in the office. Where's your costume?
I haven't had
the email about you are in costume.
Yeah. I'm dressed up as a trendy millennial.
If anybody can't see Owen right now, he is far from trendy.
What are you? You're like, I don't know, I want to be Donald Draper or something with...
I just do me. I don't try and do anything else, I just do me.
Yeah, devil, that's
I'm not in it to please.
I haven't seen too many people out there dressed up as Keith Andrews. I would have thought it would be a fairly
wig would be
look.
A standard one, wouldn't it?
Would be. Like, I think it would be fairly cheap to execute. curly wig, trendy shirt.
Cheap shirt, yeah.
Yeah, cheap shirt, exactly.
I'm not Nathan. Come on.
Oh, we're just really
cheap,
off the burn
free.
Today.
Oh, everybody's getting it. It's a free game.
Well, what point were you going to make about Halloween in general here?
Just you could have made a little bit of an effort, considering there's so many people bouncing around the office there doing raffles and whatever for people.
Well, the truth of the matter is...
There's a minion in there, the biggest minion I've ever seen in my life.
I'm actually judging the Halloween costume contest.
So you're judging it and you haven't dressed up?
Exactly, because so say for example...
Louis Walsh always dresses up.
No, okay, so say if I dressed up as a zombie, then anybody who enters the competition and is a zombie, it looks like I'm giving preference to zombies. It's like Louis Walsh singing a One Direction song
for the boy bands
as he's sitting there judging the X Factor. Like, suddenly he's favouring One Direction. So that's my...
I'm not having that excuse, personally.
The reason. I thought you were going to segue somewhere else there for a little while. There was one other thing you wanted to chat about before you get into footballing matters.
Which was...
Well, there was obviously a post-match interview done involving Nathan Murphy on Sunday.
That is footballing matters.
Oh, yes, that is footballing matters.
Of course it is. That's what we're kicking off with.
Well, yeah, of course.
So Nathan caught up last Sunday with Seamus Coleman. He's had a lot of coverage during the week. Seamus has obviously come out and had a little bite back in terms of what I've been saying about the team, management team. Firstly, I should say, got the utmost respect for Seamus Coleman. Love the fact that he is our captain. Love how he carries himself. Couldn't think of anybody better to lead our nation, lead our team. I think he's slightly taken up the wrong end of the story, or exactly what I was saying. Certainly not going to get in for a tit for tat with Seamus, and can totally understand where he is coming from in being protective of his team as the captain, and also being very loyal to his manager who made him captain. I remember being part of the era where Trapp was getting a lot of criticism, and I would have been the exact same. Very, very protective over the manager who gave me the opportunity. Look, Seamus has nailed on, no matter who the manager was, obviously he was going to be playing for us full stop. But there is that connection that they have. So no problem in Seamus coming out. I think pundits in general, sometimes it's just a one-way street. You open yourself up and people are well entitled to have their opinion coming in the opposite direction. You've got to take that on the chin. So zero problem with Seamus Coleman.
Yeah, naturally. I think Seamus Coleman is probably one of the most likable footballers out there, isn't he? I think he was kind of just telling the truth, telling it as it is. You'd almost respect him more for that to a certain extent. Like, I did wonder what your thoughts were on him kind of saying stuff about you as a player. That was the first thing I thought. I did wonder what you thought about that, but you obviously say it's a fair game.
I think it's a fair game. Yeah, I'm having an opinion in the job I'm doing now. Seamus is well entitled to his opinion. I'm critiquing these players week in, week out, whatever level it's at. And obviously when it comes to the international stage, it's the only team that I really care about. So I'm obviously going to be more passionate about it. Watched every single game that Martin's been in charge of. And that's my job now. So again, Seamus, no problem whatsoever having a bite back. And I'm sure I'm not a popular person amongst that dressing room, but I'm really not in it to be popular. Mm. You know, you've got to do your job right. And I think too often on this side of the fence, there's a little bit of splinters in your backside syndrome. And I think there's also a little bit of players being controversial for controversial's sake. And I certainly don't fit into either of those brackets, I don't feel.
Yeah, like when you say that Seamus has the utmost respect for what you're doing, like he did say you've really taken to punditry. So like he was complimenting you in your current job. It was your previous life that he might have had twisted the knife a small bit in. I would say you've taken to presenting very well as well. He didn't say that, but he said he's taken to punditry very well.
I'm not sure he'd be watching, but
he might be. I don't know. Like it was just interesting seeing some of the discourse on social media as well. The previous week and stuff. Obviously, one famous pundit was like, "And who did Keith Andrews ever manage?" And then obviously Sunday was like, "Well, his playing career. He made a few mistakes in his playing career." So it's not exactly all sort of gauging you on your current position. Is what I'm trying to say.
I'm good with it. Right, we like to keep an eye on players near, players far, especially Irish players. This fella doesn't particularly get any further away. I know there's a few people out there who'll pinpoint a few areas of the world that might be slightly further away, but it's Andy Keogh joins us on the line. Andy, thanks for joining us, buddy.
How's it going?
Very well, very well. Listen, we want to paint the picture. You've been at Perth Glory now since July 2014. Take us back to that decision to leave Millwall in the championship, I think they were at the time, to go to the other side of the world. How did it come about?
I had an offer from obviously Perth Glory, and at the time there was a few other championship teams, Sheffield United, Millwall put a new offer on the table, and My uncle was over. He lives over here, and he was speaking to the owner of Perth Glory, and told him I was on a free transfer, and they threw out an offer as well, and I just decided to go for it.
Was that a big decision, not just for you, obviously family wise as well? And I had offers late in my career to go to different places, different parts of the world. I was always skeptical about maybe at that stage you go over to that side of the world or you go far away and you're just out of the public eye. How big of a decision was it for you?
Yeah, well, it was definitely a big decision. Obviously, everyone looks towards the English league and and what you're doing there. But it was more of a challenge. And also, I had family that had moved here, and I decided I wanted to, you know, spend some time with them and catch up on stuff I missed out with them growing up. And I knew there was the bigger picture of playing over here and potentially breaking into Asia also, coming from Australia. And, you know, it was just something I just went with, and I've been, you know, been delighted with how it's gone so far.
It's the A-League's 14th season, so it's probably still early days, certainly with the history around the league. But how would you assess it? Where is it in terms of competition levels? Can you compare it to one of the leagues in England maybe, or what way do you see the league?
Well, in terms of, you probably look at it two ways. In terms of professionalism, it's as good as I've been at. You know all the modern stuff, yeah, the GPS, the analysis, you know, you're lost. The sports scientists. And then in terms of competitiveness, you know, I think the top four teams with their first 11 on the pitch can compete in the championship no problem. But being a salary capped league, you know, the squad depth is restricted. So, you know, to be able to compete in, say, the championship over a 46 game season, you know, I don't think they have any chance. But, you know, on a 11v11, best 11, you know, the top four could definitely compete.
So you've first game of the season last weekend, you got off the score sheet, got the team to a nice 1-1 draw. There's been plenty of changes, hasn't there, at the club, Perth Glory, over the summer, close season, with new manager coming in, new CEO, Tony Popovich, the manager. A lot of defenders being sized. That was an area of concern, I think, from the outside looking in last year. And look, I'm not throwing that all at the defenders' doors. You know, we all know well. You were the best centre forward I ever played with on the defensive side of the game. I remember doing an unbelievable job on Pirlo one time. But talk to us a little bit about the changes at the club.
As you said, Tony Popovich has come in, and to be honest, he has definitely changed the culture. It's a proper, as you say, 9-to-5 job now. There's no hiding. Everyone's accountable for their physical attributes and being mentally ready to step on the pitch. And, you know, to be honest, I'm loving it. You know, it is tough going, but the way he wants me to play, I feel I'm going to get a lot of chances and excel in the formation.
What's he changed tactically? Is it a different system? Do you have a different role to play in that team?
Yeah, we're playing a 3-4-3 now. Previously, it was a 4-4-2, 4-4-1-1. But yeah, basically, me being the number 9, he doesn't really want me in the channels, which is where I was used to going. You know, in the younger years, and I'm just in between the two centre backs, making sure I don't allow them to drift wide, using the wing backs / wingers to get in, and I'm just looking for the tap ins, really, doing all my work in the box, which, you know, as you get older, helps with the recovery of games and not doing those extra Ks.
Yeah, you're 32 now, and like it's even mad to think of you as a 32-year-old, because you just think of you as being that, you know, marauding, channel running centre forward, full of energy, always constantly putting the opposition under pressure. How have you had to tweak that? Or when did you start to tweak it? Or body-wise, did you start noticing any difference? I know you look after yourself really, really well, but has it been since the managers come in that you've had that different role? Do you've had to tweak your role?
No, I think it's been more of a mental thing. Actually, just getting it into my head as to, you know, not the old habits, because I feel I'm physically capable of still doing what I do, but it's more just, you know, as you get older, awareness, experience, calling back on memories of situations and games, and I think I've really worked on that aspect, and I think it's definitely been helping me, and hopefully we'll be helping the team.
So tell us a little bit about life in Perth then. We all kind of imagine what it's like, the beach life, the weather, obviously the training, I suppose at times gets in the way of that, but paint us a little bit of a picture of your average day, average week, and what you can get up to.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's obviously the climate is beautiful. You know, you wake up, it's blue skies, sunny. You go, pick up a coffee on the way to train and down on the coast. Might even have a quick dip in the sea if it's nice enough. Then into training, a good normal sesh usually. Then afterwards, about 1-2 o'clock, if we haven't had a double sesh, we'd meet the family, maybe have a bit of lunch out the backyard, or go down, have a few hours on the beach with the kids, and go from there. Really, it's quite relaxed, chilled, great place to bring up a young family. That's for sure.
That sounds amazing.
It does, doesn't it?
Well, you must be loving that, Andy.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. As I said, like, even after training, training the 30 degrees or whatever, and go down to your ice bath in the sea, catch a few waves. I've been doing that recently, and then lying in the sun. I definitely find just the sun, it keeps you in a better mood and rejuvenates the body a bit when you just, you know, take it little by little, not bake in the sun for hours, but just a little half hour here and there is nice for the body.
Sorry, so you've taken up surfing recently?
Yeah, a bit of bodyboarding and that. Yeah, that just to occupy the mind and not constantly be football, football, football.
Are you any use?
Ah, yeah. I've caught a few dumpers, which they call over here, which is just when the sand and the shallow water gets sucked right up underneath the wave, and basically if you don't catch it right, you're getting smacked into the sand and washing machine for a few minutes.
Okay. In terms of Perth as a sporting city, like, Australia is a very interesting case study in terms of how vastly different areas of the country are different, or how vastly different they are affected by sport and what their main sport is, like between rugby league in certain areas, rugby union in other areas, AFL in other areas. Like, how deeply penetrated has Perth Glory into the community in Perth? Is it close to being one of the top three sports, let's say, in the city?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we're averaging over 11,000-12,000 now per game. AFL is obviously over here. AFL is the Premier League, if you know what I mean. And people do love it, and they've got over 100,000 members. So it's hard to compete with that. But the grassroots here is all football, and it's got the biggest the membership. So, you know. If you, given time, I think the transition will slowly. Football will definitely be in the top two and going forward.
Yeah, and in terms of the profile of the A-League, obviously Usain Bolt and his addition down there at the moment, obviously, I'm pretty sure he's at the very opposite coast to you, Andy, so you've obviously not got up close and personal to him just yet, but what do you make of his addition to the A-League? I think from the outset, looking in, the cynical person might have said, well, it's a bit of a novelty factor and maybe it doesn't do the league any good, but looking at him, he can play a small bit.
Joe, because I play in the A-League, it's nice to have the attention on the A-League, but him playing in the A-League, and that's not for me. He's 31. He's never going to... For me, he's not going to be able to make it. He's shown a bit, but...
He's brutal. Come on.
It's a little bit of a kick in the teeth to the professionals that are in the league. And
that was his first touch.
From a marketing point of view, but from a football perspective, it's a little bit farcical.
What's his first touch like?
From what I've seen, it's like a trampoline, so I'm not too sure.
But obviously, he's got a little bit of pace, the lad.
I'm not going to lie, all I saw was the goal, so I judged him entirely.
I'm with Andy. I'm not having it either at all. I think it's just an absolute publicity stunt.
Is it a complete gimmick, Andy? Like, is it just the A-League? Like, obviously, you don't want to say that the A-League, we're in on this or anything like that, but is it for publicity, or is there actually somebody who genuinely thinks that Usain Bolt would be a good footballing addition?
Well, if there's someone that genuinely thinks he'd be a good footballer addition, I don't think they should be in a position to make those calls. But in terms of a publicity, it is good for them for publicity. But again, it's a salary cap league, so that means you'd have to be giving him money out of your salary cap. And is he going to contribute to your squad? And, you know, he says he's chasing a dream of being a professional footballer. Yeah, he's coming out with quotes about he wants X amount when... If you're chasing the dream, it's not about the money, it's about the dream. And he's obviously, contradicted himself massively there.
Right, you're 32 now, and for quite a number of years, you've been focused on your coaching aspirations and getting ready for retirement, whenever that may be, because I've already alluded to you're still very fit and got a number of years left in you. Tell us a little bit about what your thought process in terms of coaching is.
Yeah, so well, I think when I was about 26, I set out with the, maybe 25, with the ambition of, by the time I'm 35, to have the highest qualification possible. Obviously, that being the UEFA Pro license. Mm. And not because I think that's the be-all and end-all, but just because I think that will potentially, by the time, you know, inverted commas, 35, might get me an opportunity over someone else to get my foot in the door somewhere and prove my worth. Mm. You know, I actively go out Tuesday, Thursday, Saturdays, and I took over a semi-professional team just to help with my my development. And, you know, it's something I'm passionate about. I'm definitely actively going to pursue. And, you know, I know it's, you're basically going back to your YT days in coaching, but, you know, I'm driven to at least get my foot in the door somewhere with a little bit of experience and determination behind me.
Is it something you actually enjoyed, though, being, because we were on our, to paint the picture, myself and Andy were on the, it was a combined B&A license that quite a few of the lads did. And I think, like, I was obviously older than Andy, and I was treating it maybe more seriously than some of the other lads because I knew it was coming that little bit sooner. But I think looking at you, Andy, the way you got into it and the way we've been speaking in the last couple of years about the way you're going about it, it's certainly something you've embraced, haven't you? I can see the enjoyment that you get from it.
Yeah, I genuinely do. I love the detail. I love the reward. There's even a smile on the lads' faces when something works, something you've worked hard on all week. You know, the details, the small little details, even a throw-in. If you do something like, and you switch it to play from a throw-in that you've worked on and it works and you get your cross in and you score. I love all that. And I like to, you know, be around the lads, you know, give them a bit of knowledge from what I've learned through the lower leagues and internationally. And yeah, it's just, you know, I love football. It has been my life and will always be my life. So I want to give everything I can to be the best at every aspect of it.
It's hard to kind of think too far down the line, and obviously you're still playing at a very good level, but is the Australian route something you'd like to stay with by staying over there and coaching and potentially managing, or would you be open to coming back England or even the possibility of League of Ireland?
Yeah, no, I'm open. At the minute, we're just waiting on our Australian passport as our citizenship as a family, and then that should be in the next 6 months. And then, you know, obviously, my contract will be coming to an end with Glory, and hopefully there'll be something and there to think about from here. But yeah, if not, I'm open to whatever. And you know, obviously, as you get a bit older, and you're going to be looking to the opportunities that you can use as to finish your playing career, but also maybe catapult you into something else. So I'm very open-minded and, no, in a fortunate position that I don't have to be go chasing around for you know, the extra cash here or there. So it's you know, it's I'm really looking forward to the future, actually.
In terms of coaching, you've played under the likes of Mick McCarthy, you've played under the likes of Giovanni Trapattoni. What sort of coach are you going to be?
I'm going to be me. I'm not going to be anyone else. I'm just going to be me. I've learned a lot of things, as many professional footballers have. But you know, there's always little things you pick up from everyone, not just managers. Like even pick up things off teammates, players you played against, even off the pitch. Little things, how people conduct themselves in certain situations, and you know, I think if you can combine all that, your experience, as well as a hard work ethic, you know, that's the best way, because then you're just going to be yourself and you're gonna draw on your own experiences and your own knowledge.
I've no doubt you'll do very, very well, because you clearly can. You do have that work ethic. It's got to where you are in your footballing playing career. Looking at your former clubs, who would you say is the one that you look out for most weekends? Is there one that you go to, or is it kind of a little bit of a, we look out for Alden, Wolves, Millwall, Scunthorpe, Leeds, or is that one in particular?
I've got two. I always look out for Scunthorpe, because if it wasn't for them, I might not have had the career or the path it went. You know, they gave me the chance when I was 18, and they hold a hold a special place in the league. But, and then obviously Wolves, because my time there was amazing, and the friends and the staff and working under Mick McCarthy, that club was a serious club, as you know yourself, Keith.
Have you seen much of them over the last 18 months and the way the club's gone and the way they're playing and the plans they have to move forward? They've been so impressive.
Yeah, they got in with the super agent, didn't they? And they went from there.
Bill Hunty.
They had a plan, they had a vision, and it's fantastic to see the way they're playing. Yeah, you know, I really do enjoy that style of football, and the players that they've brought in and the ambition they're showing is not a team that's looking to just survive. It's a team that's looking to finish top 10, Europa League, maybe Champions League in 5 years, who knows. Mm. But that's obviously their vision. They haven't gone with the mentality of most clubs to get promoted.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you about the Ireland situation. I don't know how many of the games or how much you get to see from over there. What have you made? We're obviously going through a little bit of a tough time over the last 12 months or so. Have you got to see much of it?
Yeah, I'm always watching. I bumped into you at the Euros when I went to watch as well. I'm always watching. I've been obviously, like a lot of fans, disappointed as of late, but you know, like anything, you go through your ups and downs. The management team there, you know, in my opinion, have done a fantastic job getting the lads to where they got them. But you know, they're gonna have to, as you say, roll up their sleeves and book up their ideas, because at the minute it's not really going to the plan and the way people want. And this is when you find out about staff and managers and players, like you know, about what they can do about the situation.
Andy, listen, we're going to let you go. Good luck the weekend and good luck for the rest of the season. Stay in touch, buddy.
That's great. Thanks.
See you, pal. Really good fella. Really good fella. He was obviously younger than me, but we had a great obviously togetherness during that time, and he would have been one of the players that wouldn't have always played. But whenever called upon, put in an unbelievable shift. And I mentioned about that game against Italy, he did a man-to-man job on Pirlo and then made it like a 2v2 in midfield. Oh my God, it's one of my best times in a green jersey. Like, just look after Pirlo and just let us play.
Yeah.
And we beat Italy. It was obviously only in a friendly. But he's very, very serious about his coaching. So when I was coaching in the last few years, he'd be phoning up, texting, whatever, can you send me little session plans about this, about that? I'm working. And he mentioned about throw-ins, I want to work on this, I want the detail. And I think to start with the coaching, I think a lot of players do it just so they have it. And I think, I don't know whether he was in that bracket, but he certainly, as it's gone on and as he's realised playing is going to come to an end at some stage, he's taken it very, very seriously, and I think he'll do well.
Yeah, he started his coaching badges when he was 24.
Mm.
Seems very young for me to be, have that awareness that there is this afterlife once my professional career is over. It's like, I'm not sure there's many other footballers who actually go out of their way.
I think that would be the minority. Yeah. But even if you don't use them, just get them.
That's it.
Get them while you're still playing, or get them while you're, you know, you're coming towards the end and it's not, you retire day one, oh, what do I do now? And it takes you, because it takes a long time to go through the process of getting from that first rung of the ladder all the way up, and if that's where you want to get to the pro license, it takes years.
Yeah, like it's something that could be held against you.
Oh yeah, without a shadow of a doubt.
Not having that done.
Like he's talking about the possibility of maybe League of Ireland, and if he came back over to this side of the world and if he could get involved with some of our underage teams or within the FAI, I think it would be brilliant, because they have been doing that over the last few years. And he's clearly keen. So he might not have the biggest name of the ex-Irish players. And I say ex, he's still playing, but I'm talking down the line when he does end up hanging up his boots. But he's certainly one that's taken his coaching very, very seriously. So sometimes the name might sound good because they've X amount of caps and they've done so well in Premier League life or whatever, and they're household names. But if they're a better coach, then that's the route.
Yeah,
the eye should be going now.
And showing a willingness to graft, to actually be a person who can learn and become the best coach that they can possibly be. Like, you do wonder, when he broke that A-League record, what was it, 2016, eight consecutive goals? I wonder, I would say at that moment, certainly now, but if he was in that form now, he would definitely be kind of...
Being around the squad.
He should be.
It's out of sight, out of mind, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the thing. Geography definitely plays a part in it. Yeah. Like, he seems to be enjoying his life there so much that the possibility of perhaps going back and playing your trade in the Championship probably doesn't appeal too much, despite the fact that would, you know, once he was in that form in 2016, would almost automatically lead to another Ireland call-up. But
yeah, it's and the other thing as well is he's 32, but he looks after himself really, really well. And the way he's tweaked his game, which was interesting to hear, because I haven't seen, only seen the highlights and goals that he scored. I haven't seen a lot of their games. So he is that type of forward. And I would imagine you think about Andy Keogh, you think of that hard working, scraps for every ball, runs into the channels, which he himself alluded to. Now he's had to tweak his game. That's only going to help with the longevity
of
his career.
Are you going to tell us where you met him at the Euros in 2016?
Yeah, we were on the... I was working for TV3 at the time, so I did 22 games, I think it was, in the space of a month, and it was my first kind of foray into full-on games galore, and I was took 2 days off.
You weren't full pundit then?
Not quite. I was probably
you were semi-pundit.
Half quarter, maybe a third, along those lines.
Right, okay.
Definitely not
so more.
So
you didn't
have
half. Tommy Martin's respect
definitely
at that
point. No, Tommy hated me then. And couple of my pals went to the Sweden game. We met up. I'd been working the day before in, can't even remember what game I was covering. Got the train to Paris next day. Mate arrived from London. Another mate arrived from Dublin. Literally met. Had a couple of shandies. And, in fact, what am I saying? Shandies. I hate shandies. Had a few scoops. And then...
A few scoops of what then? If you're going to tell us you hate shandies,
some fucking French beer. I don't know what it was. And on the Champs-Élysées, it was crackers, wasn't it? It was bananas on the Champs-Élysées.
You said it as if I was there.
Were you not there?
No, of course I didn't get brought.
That was unbelievable.
I never get brought to the good stuff.
Either do I, actually. That's a bit of a touchy subject around here. I never get any of the good stuff. Never get any emails about good things. It's just, do your job, crack on, that's it.
Yeah, I know.
But anyway, met him. Bumped in some randoms, by the way, on that session.
Who was the most random person?
The fitness coach from Blackburn, called Derek McCarthy. Irish lad, obviously. From Limerick, and just literally walking along the Champs-Élysées, bang, there he is in front of me dish. Ridiculous. Wasn't very impressed with the...
Did he have a shandy?
He probably did, knowing him, yeah. He was shandy pants. Well, listen, we're going off on tangents here. I need to move on to Champions League bits and bobs. Okay, speaking of Virgin Media Sport, last night, Graeme Souness and Brian Kerr gave their thoughts on Shaqiri. Let's have a listen.
I think there's a bit of relief for the manager as well when you take a punt on someone who hasn't had a great season. The team are relegated, and there's some question. I think they got him quite cheap, didn't they? With 12 million, yeah. You know, for a striker for a top team at this stage of the way the market
is. It's a good deal, isn't it?
It was a good deal. So he took a punt on him, and he's already getting a bit of return out of him. I agree with Kevin that he can learn. He's 27. His career, he was Basel. Player emerged from Basel. Bayern Munich took a chance on him. Never became a regular at Bayern Munich with all their type of Galacticos. He was always a bit player. Went to Stoke, and Stoke ended up.
He had a loan spell. It was at Inter Milan.
Yeah, he did go to Inter for a while as well. He had a season there. Then he goes to Stoke, which was always going to be a bit of a mid-table scrap, if not lower table. Now he goes to a team. Who challenged for the Champions League and will challenge for the Premier League. So it's a great opportunity for him in his career.
You couldn't use him as a proper box-to-box midfield player because his hamstrings would not allow that. he'd be spending a lot of time on the treatment table. He might willingly want to do it in his head, but his body would let him down. You know, to do that 60, 70-yard running, he's a little, you know, power burst, sees a picture, technique, door opener.
But a real addition to
Liverpool. A real asset. For a team that dominates the ball and is always on the front.
Yeah, so that was the lads talking last night about Shaqiri. I was on commentary last night, made the point during commentary that just the squad depth, the attacking players they have now, and there's been a little bit too much hype about the front three maybe not hitting the heights that they did last year. I think Mane's probably been the pick of the bunch so far this season. Everybody's eyes well and truly on Salah in terms of what he's doing, how he's going about it. Gets two goals last night. Played a different system last night. Played a 4-2-3-1. And played Firmino.
Salah's the one.
Yeah, Salah's the one up front. He got the two goals. And it says something where he's able to actually experiment in a Champions League group stage, because that's what it was last night. Behind that Fabinho and Wijnaldum did very well. Fabinho grew into the game. But the point that the lads were making on Shaqiri in particular, I think him, Lallana, Sturridge, if you keep those three fit, firing and relatively happy, then you've got six. Then you're laughing. Then you're really, really laughing. Then you're able to challenge for Premier League. You're able to go and take those three games in 7 days, three games in 6 days, or when it comes to seven games in a space of 24, 25 days, you're able to rotate the squad. He made five changes from the win at Huddersfield at the weekend where they weren't particularly impressive, but get the job done. I think there's good signs that they don't have to be at their most explosive to get results, whereas last night was comfortable, obviously.
Yeah, the thing that I would say is very encouraging for Liverpool at this point in the season is that maybe this is just part of the growth process, that it was kind of like they've gone up another level and then Jurgen Klopp has to get used to having a deeper squad. I think that comes with its own set of problems, as you mentioned there, happiness, rotation, finding the right different types of rotations. And I think he's figured that out. So I think there's every chance that Liverpool, around this time last season, maybe a little bit later, they finally made that step up. It took them a couple of months to get into the season and then they hit the ground running. They might do the same thing this year, like they've hit the ground running at the start of the season, but they might make that step up again, which is above any height they've ever reached under Jurgen Klopp. And that is the really encouraging thing for this Liverpool side, whereby the only reason I can see this really stuttering is if they get an injury to Salah or to Firmino. I think even Mane, despite the fact that you say he's been consistently brilliant so far this season out of the three, I think he's more replaceable than the other two because Salah can reach heights that nobody else in that squad can reach. And Firmino obviously plays that very vital role, despite the fact that he didn't really play it last night, which I thought was very interesting. Fabinho, I was surprised with how good he was last night, particularly with the ball at his feet and his range of passing.
Yeah, if we go back to 2 years ago and what he was doing at Monaco, I don't think many people would be too surprised because he was really, really impressive. Mm. But on the flip side of that, so was Bakayoko. And I think Chelsea have signed his twin brother, who's then flipped off to Milan on a cheap flight. And they're, I think, looking to flick him back towards London because he hasn't been impressive in Milan either. Whether he's got his handbrake on with his nice contract under his belt, I'm not so sure. But I'm actually happy for Fabinho because when you go for that level of money, the expectation levels, you're expected to just slot in seamlessly. And I think he struggled to get to speed with the intensity of games and probably their training as well, which I would imagine is 100 miles an hour because it's the way Klopp likes to play. I can't imagine his training sessions being nice and easy, going through the motions. And I thought last night, the first 10 minutes, he actually started a little bit sluggish, Fabinho, but then he showed
away a ball early on, didn't he?
Just a little bit flat-footed, a little bit wanting that extra split second. So I'm going to give him loads of credit because very easy to then kind of go back into yourself, but he showed real character. He showed balls and getting on the ball and making things happen. And he started playing on the front foot and he was very, very impressive, both in possession and those long, rangy legs tackling from everywhere. He must be a nightmare to get into little tangles with because there's only one winner there with the size of him. So he was really, really good. So, yeah, positive signs.
Yeah, Shaqiri then, kind of the exact opposite of what Andy Keogh was talking about. Not a trampoline. In regards to his touch and he
just gives them extra guile though, and he gives them something different, I think, than those front three players have. When he comes inside and he plays that ball for Salah over the top, he has that awareness, he has that intricacy, the touch for the goal.
I was just about to say,
his weaker right foot, by the way, just cushions it, takes the weight off it into the path of Salah. Salah's touch was good, goal, game over.
But the thing was, Wijnaldum blasted the ball at him.
Yeah. But that's the trust they have in each other, you know. Good players do that. If you look at the way Steven Gerrard used to pass the ball, he used to fizz it in. Roy Keane was the same. Fizz balls in because they used to test and they knew their teammates were obviously able to deal with that.
Yeah. Just two last things. Like it's stating the obvious at this point, how comfortable Joe Gomez looks in that back four. But also that one moment where, like, obviously we're working on the game so you remember it, but Alisson and his distribution with his feet has been well documented, but his distribution with his arms is class as well. Like that little ball that he played down to Robertson on the left-hand side, taking two Red Star men out of the ball, just fizzing along the touchline for Robertson, and two passes, and they were in and created half a chance of goal.
How good is Robertson as well, by the way?
Oh my God, but like, again, talk about things that are being flogged to death. It's the growth of Andy Robertson. Like, he's just been superb, and those fullbacks must just be love playing under the system. And you know, if you're a United fan or if you're an Everton fan right now, it must be pretty hard watching this Liverpool team because as a neutral, they're so bloody good to watch. It was like even though they were battering them last night, it was just one of those games where you enjoyed every minute.
Yeah, they were very good, weren't they? Mm. Very good. Okay, we've spoke to one Irish player on the other side of the world. We've got another one on the line who isn't too far away, down in the Rebel County, Mr. Damien Delaney. Damien, thanks for joining us, pal.
Pete, how are you?
I'm very well, I'm very well. Look, before we get on to League of Ireland, Cork, yourself, talk to us a little bit. I don't know whether you've seen the Liverpool game last night, but just in general, Virgil van Dijk and the difference he has made to that back four and the comfort and the kind of responsibility he's shown. How impressed have you been with him?
Yeah, he's been fantastic. When you look at the job he's been asked to do, because Liverpool don't particularly play with an out-and-out number four sitting midfield player, you know, that sits and protects. So centre-backs in that Liverpool team have often been left isolated 1v1 or 2v2. So you have to be a very, very, very good defender to deal with that. And you have to be quick and mobile. And obviously he ticks all those boxes. So he's been fantastic.
Do you like Joe Gomez? I'm a massive fan of his. I loved last year. I was looking at him playing right back and I was thinking, give him the crack of the whip inside. Come on, we were seeing Matip playing there. We were seeing Lovren. I just love the way Gomez goes about his business. At times it just looks so easy for him, doesn't it?
Yeah. You need to be so mobile nowadays to play in the modern game, because most managers don't want fullbacks pushing, not even just up the pitch. They want to blame wingers, you know, if the right fullback crossing, they want the left fullback coming in the back post now. So that can leave us very, very, very open on the counter attack. A lot of teams do play with two number fours like Spurs, you know, with Dembele or Wanyama or Dyer, whoever it is. You know, Liverpool play with Henderson, who tends to roam and go and get involved as well. So on the turnover, you have to be very, very mobile, because you might end up in areas where you don't really want to be. And the two of them are very, very good defenders 1v1 and are quite capable and quite confident of dealing with that.
That's quite interesting that you mentioned the kind of trend in playing two number fours, Damien. Do you think that there's kind of a lack of trust in the good old centre-half to look after the business themselves?
Not really. You know, I mean, the game's changing so much now that, you know, centre-half to just kind of fill the middle of goal and be strong and headed away is gone, because football now is all about attacking and getting forward and getting crosses in the box. And we worry about the other side at the end of it. And I think Klopp found that in the Premier League, because teams can counter-attack so quickly in the Premier League. And he didn't want two number fours, because then he was short a couple of players attacking-wise. So he just decided to go the other way and get two centre-halves that can deal with it 1v1. Or if they do get broke on 3v2, they're quite capable of dealing with it. And they might get cut out every so often, but on the law of averages, top defenders like that can deal with it, you know?
I think a prime example of that as well, I don't know whether you've seen this, Damien, was when he was playing for the Netherlands a few weeks ago, and I think I mentioned it to you, Owen, Mbappe against Van Dijk, and he broke on him. He basically had the vast majority of the half to break into. Van Dijk comes across because they were open, because they were stretched, and it's Mbappe. So I would be shitting myself.
Literally,
as cool as a cucumber, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That's what you need. Unfortunately, that's just unfortunately for me, really, the way the game's gone. I got caught a couple of times 1v1 with a few people, and I thought, Lord above, give me strength. But, you know, that's just the way the game has gone, and I could see it as well, you know, towards the end there. You know, teams don't want to really defend anymore. You know, they just want to attack and score goals. And, you know, Spurs, I think now, playing two defensive midfield players, you know, where, you know, if one of the fullbacks does get dragged out, one of the centre-backs does get dragged out wide, one of the number fours just slots into the centre-back and you have your shape back straight away. Whereas Liverpool don't do that. They just let the centre-backs get on with it. And I think that's why they were susceptible to goals an awful lot last year. I know centre-backs got an awful lot of criticism, you know, Lovren and Klavan and Matip and people like that. But I tell you what, there's only a handful of defenders can play in that system in the world. They're mobile enough and quick enough and young enough. That's the other thing, you know, you have to be young. When you look at the stats after games, you know, centre-backs normally cover about 9 kilometres. Those Liverpool centre-backs cover probably 11 or 12K in a game.
Yeah,
they are just running so much.
I agree, and it's something that maybe people don't actually look at, the way the team is set up and how much protection maybe your centre-half, your centre-midfielder can get. If full-back play in a conservative manner, you obviously can look very, very good. If you flick it across towards Manchester United and the way that their centre-half issue is at the moment, and the latest one, Jose Mourinho's coming out and he's saying basically he'd love to have Chiellini, he'd love to have Bonucci. I think he tried to get Bonucci in the summer, he tried to get Boateng, tried to get Aldevere, tried to get everybody, didn't he? So if you're a centre-half, firstly, never mind the way they're playing, what way does that make you feel? Because it certainly wouldn't sit well with me. Your manager constantly going out. How is your confidence supposed to be anywhere near what it can be when your manager's coming out and chipping away like that?
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, I mean, Jose's kind of going into survival mode for himself at the moment now, because he was one that would never do stuff like that. He was always a player's manager who protected players to the hilt and took the spotlight off them as best he could. But I think Jose knows it, probably a little bit worried for himself, and he's probably thinking, hang on a minute, I need to start getting the spotlight away from me now, because he's not as comfortable as what he has been in the past at other clubs. But as a centre-half, if your manager's coming out saying that publicly, of course it takes the bounce out of your step. You know, look at how much energy those Liverpool players have, and you look how affectionate Klopp is with them openly. You know, he's very, very, very affectionate with them, and as a player, that does make you feel good. On the flip side, when you're Mourinho asking to sign other players, well, you know, that definitely would take the bounce out of your step, you know.
It's difficult, isn't it? And would you have sympathy for those centre-halves in terms of even the way that the team is set up, the way they are a little bit exposed, and obviously Matic sits in front, but you never quite know, are you, what way he's going to sit up week to week, whether it's a 4-3-3 or what's happening in front, what fullbacks are playing with you?
I just think that whole United setup is just kind of, you know, lagging at the minute. You know, I look at the centre halves that look down, the midfield players are down, the attacking players look down. You know, United signed a couple of players who were probably just slightly past their best, and they're getting them on the way down. You know, when you run through that United squad there, you know, I look at it and I just see a squad full of squad players, if you know what I mean. I'll explain so far as when Man United of old played, Ferguson always had 5 or 6 squad players, you know, that when he needed to give the big hitters a rest, he'd bring in 1 or 2 when they were playing Palace, Watford, West Brom, you know, and they could carry them through. But he knew he had 15 top level players. You look at it now, United just seem to have 15 kind of stocking fillers, really, if you know what I mean. Just kind of cobbled together. There's no real superstar in that. If there is a superstar, he's on the downward trend at the minute, you know, and he can't really raise his game again to lift the club or put the club on its back like so many great players at United did for years. You know, a lot of them, they don't look like big personalities. They don't look like they've got real, you know, character about them. So it's difficult to watch, and I feel sorry for Jose, because he kind of is a victim, and he hasn't helped himself because he's had a couple of transfer windows. But you know, United got desperate there and threw a lot of money, went into transfer windows without a plan, without an end game, without a long term strategy, and they just kind of threw money at a problem, and now they're just left with a patchwork group of players that don't really fit together, don't really mould together. Nobody really knows what shape they play, what's the best shape. So I do feel sorry for Jose, but I think he'll be under pressure.
Yeah, it's a pretty good summation of it, because I think it's quite en vogue to actually just hop on the bandwagon and blast Jose Mourinho, particularly after what he said after the Juventus games, saying that, you know, Juventus needed bits and pieces here, and they went and they signed them, and people are like, oh, give me a break, cry me a river, Jose, all the money you got to spend. And I think Jonathan Wilson in The Guardian put it best when he said he's got expensive pieces here and there, and I think that it agrees exactly with what you're saying there. This is basically a thatchwork of a squad.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if you ask Joseph for his honest thoughts, I'd say he'd get rid of 15 of a squad right now.
Nice.
But you know, Juventus have obviously had a transfer strategy. Liverpool have had, I mean, good Liverpool are, listen, they've had 5 or 6 years. I mean, Klopp's been there 3 years building for this squad. So it took them 3 years to get to this point. Now, you know, Jose had to undo a whole load of work from Van Gaal and from Moyes. I don't really want to blame them, but I'm not really sure, because, like, you know, did they have complete control of that transfer window, or were other people just signing names, or were agents involved with directors of football and owners and just shoving players in? So you don't really know, but I'd say there's at least 12, 15 there that Jose would let go, really, though. But you can't, because they're no real value, because everyone sees they're either past their best or they're not as good as everyone thought they were. They're on massive contracts, long-term contracts. So United can't shift them, so they can't free up the budget. So I think United fans are going to have to suffer, really. And I think when you look at Jose's record, with all that in mind, you know, he's won a Europa League, he's got him back in the Champions League. I think he has done a fantastic job. I think he really has. I think he's a top manager. But he just needs to undo an awful lot of, or unravel an awful lot of the bad policies that United have had over that since Ferguson left in the last 4 or 5 years, whatever it is. But difficult to unravel it, because, you know, people have long-term contracts and you're not shifting them, unfortunately.
Damien, I want to ask you about your former club, Crystal Palace. I'm surprised to see them where they are, struggling for goals, huge reliance on Wilfred Zaha, who's maybe been slightly off in the last few weeks. Maybe I think they've only scored 5 goals in the Premier League, 9 games this season. Are you surprised to see them where they are?
I am, really. Yeah, very, very surprised. you know, it's unfair for people to criticise Wilfred because, I mean, you know, people I think have figured out now that if you can stop Wilfred, there's nothing else to come. You know, you don't have another option, really. Now, they've been playing some OK football, but, you know, they've been making some critical mistakes at critical times, and they've just found out now that you don't have another option. Signing people like Ayew as well, you know, you'd wonder, like, that was just kind of a, we need a centre-forward, stick one in there. The other boy, Alexander Sorloth, you know, came from Denmark. You know, Christian's obviously not been in the best of form, and now he's out injured. So, you know, they don't have a centre-forward. They don't have another option to Wilf. I think it'll be a long season for them, but on the plus side, they do have Roy Hodgson, who I think is a fantastic manager. I think he will keep them up. But I think after last year, everyone was expecting them to kick on, you know, to go on an extra, maybe start challenging the top 10, maybe have a cup run in one of the cups. That's what we were looking for, but it looks like it's going to be the same old relegation battle and probably pull a rabbit out of the hat and stay up again at the end of the year.
Before we let you go, we've got to ask you about the cup final in 10, 11 days, isn't it now? Yeah. How's the mood in the camp? I suppose disappointment, obviously, with the league campaign that you couldn't kind of keep it going and make more of a fist of it, but fully focused on the cup final?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, you know, Dundalk, I think, have finished with a record points total. You know, we had a iffy spell there where we lost two and drew one. So Dundalk obviously just kicked on and opened up a gap and we couldn't quite catch them. But we have a chance now to get one over them in a one-off game in a cup final at the Aviva. The mood is really, really good. Obviously, the lads will be lifting and ready to go for that game on Sunday week. And hopefully we can get it done.
Good stuff. I shall be there having a couple of shandies. Anyway, thanks for joining us. Good luck, pal.
Cheers, Keith. Thanks, man.
See you, buddy.
Bye.
You going to go into that game? Or is that Beniti? Well, there's a bit of snobbery in this office. I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, I'm not.
There is football snobbery in this office.
Do you think so?
100%.
Like,
anytime I mention the championship, championship.
You know that I'm on board with the championship.
Yeah, you are, to be
from
fair.
April onwards. I'm fully on board with the championship. It's one of the greatest divisions in the world. And if there's shandy at a game of football, I'll be there, Keith. So
yeah,
let's go to it. Let's do it. When's it on? Sunday week.
You're a shandy pants, eh?
What is a shandy pants?
Someone who has a few shandies rather than a few points.
Oh, no. Jesus Christ, no. I'm not a shandy pants. Right. Well,
who do you think is shandy pants in the office?
Oh, that is controversial. Adrian Barry's a shandy pants. Well, he's more of a wine connoisseur.
Is he?
Presenter of Friday morning's OTB AM, coming your way tomorrow morning, of course.
Good plug.
Very smooth. There's not too many shandy pants. It's more pint men. There's pint men all around the office.
Okay.
Pint men and women.
Okay. What we got time for, Kieran? What shall I get on to? We've kind of ran over there. Championship. Let's do a bit of championship. So, as ever, tight. As you like, top of the league. Leeds had a good win, 2-0 against Ipswich. But if you look at the top of the league, three teams on 26 points. And then between them and down in 16th is Aston Villa, which basically is separated by 8 points. The swing in the championship, when it becomes a Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday week, is frightening. You've only got to look bottom corner of that graphic there. West Brom won, Derby County 4, what a win. West Brom now back-to-back defeats. It would have been one of my teams to go up alongside Middlesbrough. As soon as they found their feet after those first few games, the transfer window was shut. They kept hold of some key players, Dawson, Jay Rodriguez. They got Dwight Gayle in the building, Harvey Barnes smashing it up. But again, just shows the way this league can go. And I genuinely think this year, more than any year, is there for one of the underdogs to get promoted. I really do.
I wonder, are you better off at the start of a championship season? Now, this is a balancing act, so not make sure that this leads into complacency, but just say to your players, listen, we're going to lose a load of games this year that we're not expected to lose. We're going to be down in the dumps. We're going to feel like this is the worst division in the world, because in actual fact, it's probably one of the best, most competitive leagues in the world.
Yeah, but that's where coaching staff comes in. So if the manager, I've played under managers where they would be down in the dumps and they would be, But if that's on a Saturday, you've Sunday off, you can't come in on the Monday morning and be like that, because there's a game on the Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly.
So the assistant manager, the coach, has to be that good cop, has to be the jovial character, lift the spirits,
but without
come that quick.
Yeah, without saying, oh, defeats are fine.
Yeah, it's like, a fine line, obviously. You debrief, you pick the holes in what went wrong, the frequency of the games means you can't be he just can't be down in the dumps because they come that quick.
I can't believe he didn't call out the biggest piece of championship news from last night. Niall Horan talking up Derby County and then Leeds United's Twitter account having a pop at Niall Horan.
Niall Horan? Is he a Derby County fan?
He must. I don't know why he was tweeting up with Derby County. Lampard. He must be a Derby County fan. He's probably played golf with Frank Lampard. Mm. But I'm
good golfer. Isn't
he? I'm disappointed that you didn't include that in your championship update.
Well, I did include.
No, Niall Horan.
Did include Derby. Oh, I didn't even hear that, did I?
Well, you know,
you're a social media predator. You hear everything,
Jesus,
don't you?
Jesus Christ! That is libelous right there.
So I didn't went under my radar that one, but I'm glad you were there to give me the real key points of the championship that Niall Horan has tipped Derby County. I'll be sure to mention that this weekend.
Call it. You haven't called who's going to 1-6 in the championship. Give me 1-2.
Well, I look deluded to you. I'm not going to call that. It could be any of them. It could be absolutely any of those. I've been quite vocal about Leeds, and Leeds fans have been battering me from pillar to post, saying that I'm keep on being negative about them. My worry with Leeds is that they don't have the squad depth. Hernandez and Roof have come back in the last week, made a difference. And a little bit what Damien Delaney said about 14, 15 players, that's where I feel Leeds are. They've been that reliant, they've had that little changes to the starting lineup only when they've had injuries, really, that I worry about them when it gets to 25, 30 plus games into this season with the reported training methods of Bielsa being very, very, well, very, very high intensity. Mm. So there's that element, but I think it's wide open.
You put it clearly, it's clearly wide open.
But like, it's. I think it'll still be like this. I can't see a team going on a run. Like, I thought maybe Borough will start edging away, but disappointing draw the other night, 0-0 away to, at home to Rotherham, who are fighting for their lives with the Irish midfielder, Richie Tell and Manning, doing really well, fighting in there. But that just shows, Rotherham at home, you'd expect to just win. Goals are an issue for Middlesbrough. Sheffield United, one of the best teams to watch. If I was to buy a season ticket in the championship, it would probably be for Sheffield United.
Right.
I think they're so exciting to watch.
Why? What makes them so exciting?
Well, they play a 3-4-3 or 3-5-2 system. The wing-backs play like wingers. Everything is on the front foot. It's 100 miles an hour. They play a brand of football that's not just possession-based, but that has evolved. They can keep possession. They play forward. They play diagonal balls. They run in behind. It's all action. You very rarely get a poor game at Bramall Lane.
It oddly sounds like a system that could almost get the best out of James McLean and Matt Doherty.
Yeah, pushing right on, and let's not go there. Just iron for his own today.
Just saying.
Iron for his own. I think that's all we've got time for. Have we got a tweet? Have we? Hang on.
Is that your new policy?
You've been on Twitter while I've been talking to you.
No.
Peter Cavanagh on Twitter. Why do you hate Leeds, Keith? I don't hate Leeds, Peter Cavanagh. I really don't hate Leeds. I've got a lot of admiration. Have been some of the most impressive football we've seen in the championship, but I'm not sure they'll sustain it.
What were you giving out to me about for being on Twitter?
I thought it might have been you tweeting in.
Oh, sorry. No. Well, you do hate me.
But anyway, I like your trendy millennial gear.
Yeah, for Halloween.
And you're going to be judging the fancy dress.
That's it. All bribes accepted. Cash only, please. Although there is a card reader doing the rounds.
This is what you got to deal with in this place. Bribery.
It's fair enough. You can bribe me and you can win. Like, I expect next week on the Keith Andrews Show, does it fall on the 1st of November? Like, I mean, that's time enough for you to dress up for Halloween, Keith. And I think that's what we all want. I want it. The audience want it. Dress up for Halloween.
But if I had been involved in the email chain, I still wouldn't have dressed up.
So you're such a killjoy. Do you hate Halloween? Do you hate Christmas as well?
No, I don't hate Halloween at all. My wife had a big party when I was at MK Dons as captain. I think it must be, 10, 11, 12 years ago. We just all kind of got together in this close season, new squad, new team. We thought we'll do something just to get everybody integrated, and it was quality. There was one of the dance acts from back in Britain's Got Talent or something like that.
Diversity.
No, I remember they'd done a thriller dance. Do you remember it? You were about four then, weren't you?
Yeah, about that, 4.5.
No, I'm not against Halloween at all.
What did you dress up as in that MK Dons party?
I dressed up as the character from Saw.
Right, Jigsaw.
Yeah, Jigsaw, that was it.
Right, that's
quite scary.
Oh, fairly grim, yeah.
Good night, to be fair. A mate of mine dressed up as a jester and slept on my front doorstep all night.
Okay. He went into full character mode.
Literally went into full character mode. He went AWOL, ended up back at my house, didn't hear him, and woke up next morning at 10, 11 o'clock, he's on my doorstep. So that was a good crack.
Very unlike him. Good kid party. Enjoy themselves like that, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, that is all we got time for. We've gone to too many tangents. Owen, thank you as ever.
No, thanks for having
valuable
me.
Guest. Told you, always welcome.
Well, you know, I welcome the addition of being invited on here.
Cheers, pal, appreciate it. Okay, that's all we got time for. Thanks for joining us as per usual, available on all the Off The Ball platforms. Until next week, take care, have a good week.
Football on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.